But before all of that, very timely, as sort of Chelsea, one of his old clubs, are in action. David Speedy has written his autobiography, The David Speedy Story. And he joins us now. David, good afternoon.
Afternoon.
Did you have a few other titles? I mean, you've gone route one with your title, David. So did you have any other titles in mind, or did you thought, that's it, that's exactly what it is, it's the David Speedy story, we're going with that?
No holds barred, everything in it's true. A lot of what's happened in my career isn't in it, for legal reasons.
Wow, okay.
But, yeah, I've had an eventful life in football, and you know, it's glad to be. I'm just glad to be still a part of it.
Did they? Did the person, your co-author on this, who worked with you on the book, did they say, "Yeah, I'm not sure we can get away with it. I don't think we can say that, David." Did they have to check a few things?
That's exactly what went on. Yeah. Mainly from Paul Hodgson, the author.
Yeah,
I dictated everything, and then he had to calm it down a little bit.
Was you settling a few scores? Was that what it was?
It was, I got a lot of things off my chest.
Yeah.
It was a great experience, but I'm a bit disappointed with a couple of things. Mick McCarthy wasn't best man at my wedding.
Right.
That was a mistake.
Ah.
It was, I can't remember his name, Michael Holliday, who was my best man.
Right. Michael Oliver.
His nickname's obviously Doc.
Yes. Yeah, of course.
But Mick McCarthy was at the wedding, but yeah, he wasn't my best man. I don't know how that got interpreted that way, but...
Wow. Like a mixed speech. I don't know how long he would have done as a speech, Mick. I don't know. Yeah, that would have might have been quite interesting.
He played 162 times for Chelsea, and more than any other club. And, of course, in those days, it was the dual threat. And you and Kerry Dixon were that, and everybody thinks one, you can't think of one name without the other.
Yeah, Pat Nevin as well.
Yeah, so, of course, yeah.
Of course. But that as a striking duo.
Yeah, we got on great, me and Kerry. It was like a telepathic, understanding with each other. And I did most of the running, though, I do have to say that. He did the scoring, I did the running.
Was it, you say telepathy, was it almost like from day one, you just sort of hit it off, you just had this understanding?
No, that was down to the manager, John Neil. He called us in, because we weren't getting on to start with, because I wasn't really happy with me doing all the running and him doing nothing.
Yeah.
or practically nothing.
Yeah.
But John Neil called us in and said, "You don't know what yous have got. Wow. He does that, you do this. And together you're magic." And then we both laughed, shook hands, and we were best of friends from that day to this.
Wow. That's good management.
That's very good management, yeah.
Yeah, it was brilliant. John Neil was brilliant.
Yeah.
He treated everybody different. He didn't just treat us all the same.
Yeah.
Everybody's got their own personalities. And he was good at giving you a kick up the backside or talking to you privately.
Yeah.
But it is interesting. We've seen the long ball coming back. We've seen the long throw coming back. I wonder if we're going to see the twin strikers coming back.
Yeah, because often we see one up top, don't we? That's the way teams work. We don't really see two up top anymore. Would you like to see a bit more of that, David?
I actually struggle to watch a full game these days.
Wow.
It drives me nuts. I'd sooner watch the highlights. VAR, they don't even know how to run that. All they've got is some lines. You can tell whether somebody's offside or not. So I'm not a big fan of the new rules. I just don't get it. I think it's ruining our game.
Yeah, I know. I don't think you're alone in that. Unlike a lot of people, you didn't, go through the academy and just have a life in football. You had a life before football. And you were a coal miner, weren't you? You were down the mines.
10 months of hell.
Wow.
Really? Wow.
I was signed on as a youth player at Barnsley, but they didn't take me on as an apprentice, so I had to find work. So I ended up down the pit with my dad.
Wow.
And 10 months of that is enough for anybody. But I was still playing, and I got signed by Barnsley as a pro when I was 17. So I never did my apprenticeship. I was just because I was earning too much money at the pit. believe it or not.
Wow, yeah. I mean, did that spur you on because it was such hard work, such difficult work? That spurred you on to make it as a footballer?
No, I just loved the game. I mean, but it does make you try a bit harder.
Sure.
To get out. But, yeah, I wouldn't recommend that job to anybody going a mile underground and a couple of mile out under the earth.
Yeah, basically. Scary stuff. You were Kenny Dalglish's last signing at Liverpool. People often forget that, don't you? Had a little spell at the club before you went to Blackburn and had a good time there. So what are your memories of your time at Liverpool?
Oh, I loved it. I thought I'd done all right. I can't understand why I packed in. I scored on my debut at Old Trafford and then two against Everton the following Saturday. So it was a lot of pressure on Kenny.
Yeah.
That's probably in my book as well. I don't know whether they took that out. I've not actually read it all yet.
Oh, you've read the McCarthy best man bit. Yeah, that's
I've been that bit. Yeah, somebody told me about that. Put that right.
You've been very upfront and very honest about how much you struggled after football. You're not the only footballer to deal with that. You know, missing the lifestyle and the sort of day-to-day involvement in the game. You say you were severely depressed straight after you retired.
Yeah, when you finish with injury, it's really difficult to overcome. And I found it very difficult. Started drinking too much. It was a nightmare for quite a while.
Yeah, well.
You played for a long time, didn't you, after Leicester? You played.
Yeah, I played. That was just to sort of straighten my head out. I needed to do something to play. Ewan Roberts asked me to be his agent, so I went through all the procedures, and I was one of the very few licensed football agents in the world, not in the country, in the world. I had to put up a bond of 100 grand.
I remember that, yeah.
So that, you know, I was one of the legal ones.
Yeah, of course. It's so what are you up to these days, David?
Very little apart from golf.
Oh, okay. And
I'm on my way to a charity event in Norfolk, Archway Events, Roger Day. They do a lot for charity, and I'll be meeting up with a lot of the lads down there. And then on Friday, I'll be doing a signing at the Tavern pub. I can't remember where the place is, but that's in Norfolk. Okay. So I'm down there for 3 days.
Nice one. And what's your golf like? What's your playoff?
13.1. I used to be 6 until he had them COVID jabs. Killed me.
Oh, well, blimey. And who are the great golfers you play with? The great footballing golfers you encountered? Who are the guys that you played football with and played golf with who were very good?
They were very good. Matt Letizia is a good golfer.
Yeah.
He was playing last week at Tankersley in a charity golf day that we were all at. Who else is quite good? Lee Hendry.
Oh, okay.
We go to the Footballers Golf Classic every year, and he's always in the prizes, Lee. He's a great golfer.
Excellent. Well, look, we wish you well with the book, David.
Yeah, good luck, David.
All the best. Enjoy your golf. Good to talk to you. Thanks very much.
Take care.
David Speedy there. The David Speedy story is available now, published by Pitch. And you get along at the Tavern down in Norfolk and get a signed copy and say hello to David.